If you've gotten tired of hacking firewalls or cloud computing, maybe it's time to try your hand with DNA. That's what Reshma Shetty is doing with her doctorate in biological engineering from MIT. Apart from her crowning achievement of getting bacteria to smell like mint and bananas, she's also active in the developing field of synthetic biology and has recently helped found a company called Ginkgo Bioworks, which is developing enabling technologies to allow for rapid prototyping of biological systems. She'll be giving a talk entitled Real Hackers Program DNA at a Rally's Emerging Technologies Conference in March, and she's joining us here today. Thank you for taking the time.
No problem. Happy to be here.
So first of all, how do you make bacteria smell nice and why? I get an image of a commercial. Mary may have necrotizing fasciitis, but at least your hospital room smells minty fresh.
The original inspiration for the project was the fact that for anybody who works in a lab, who works with E. coli, if you grow up cultures of the stuff, it just smells really bad. It smells really stinky, basically. And so our thought was, hey, why don't we re-engineer the smell of E. coli? You know, it'll make the lab smell minty fresh. And it's also, you know, kind of a fun project that gets people who maybe aren't normally excited about biology kind of interested in it, because it's a kind of a very tangible thing. I can smell, you know, the change I made to this bacteria.
How was the actual process involved?
So the process was, you basically take a gene. We took a gene from the petunia plant, which normally, you know, provides an odor to flowers, and you place that gene into the E. coli cell, and by supplying the cell with an appropriate precursor, you make this minty smell as a result. So it's fairly straightforward.
Your degree, biological engineering, is a new one to me. How is it different from biochemistry or microbiology or genomics or any of the other traditional biotech degrees?
Well, biology and biochemistry and so on are concerned with studying the natural world. So I'm going to go out and figure out how the natural world works. Biological engineering, instead, is really all about saying, hey, you know, we have this natural world around us. The biology is, in some sense, a new technology through which we can build new engineered biological systems, right? So the idea is, you know, what's the difference between physics and electrical engineering? Well, electrical engineers want to go build. So in biological engineering, we're interested in going and building stuff too, but using biology rather than physics as the underlying science of it.
Explain a little bit about the field of synthetic biology.
So synthetic biology is a new field that's kind of arisen over the past few years among a group of engineers and scientists kind of all over the world who are saying, you know, as right now, it's really actually quite hard to engineer biological systems. Even just to kind of put pieces of DNA together can be a fairly laborious and manual process that's pretty error prone. So how do we make that process easier? How do we say make it so that an undergraduate or a team of undergraduates can go engineer E. coli to smell like wintergreen and banana in just a summer? Typically, that's, you know, people usually assume that those type of projects are just too hard to do because the tools we have essentially suck. So synthetic biology is focused on the effort of making biological engineering easier.
What areas do you see synthetic biology having the largest short-term impact on?
Well, I think you're already seeing some of the impacts in, for example, the biofuel space. So there are a lot of folks interested in saying, hey, you know, instead of pulling oil out of the ground, why don't we just make it from a vat of engineered microbes? And kind of the project that's kind of the most intriguing to folks right now probably is a company called Amyris Biotechnologies, where they have a pathway for making an anti-malarial drug. So this is a drug that you can naturally find and extract from the wormwood plant, but these plants are pretty rare, and it's really expensive to manufacture this drug from the plant. And so in order to develop more cure, or essentially develop more of this drug and get the cost down cheap enough so that it's actually an accessible cure for malaria for use in kind of third world developing countries, they engineered microbes to produce the anti-malarial drug. And so this is the kind of the poster child application of synthetic biology. Making stuff cheaper, you can essentially better people's lives.
A concern that some people raise about the ease with which one can order designer biology these days is that it's becoming more likely, either by accident or design, for something particularly nasty to enter the environment. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, for us, what we're really interested in doing at Ginkgo is making biological engineering easier. And obviously, one of the aspects, what that means is you're essentially democratizing access to the technology. You're making it so that more and more people can come in and engineer biological systems. Now, just like with any technology, by making it easier and making it more accessible, you're both promoting huge advantages, and you know there are going to be areas for concern. You know, how do we know that the next time around, when we have an outbreak of avian flu or whatnot, how do we know that the traditional quote unquote academic labs and research institutes around the world are going to be prepared to respond? You know, maybe we can develop a wider network of people who can kind of work towards engineering biological systems for good. Right? You're creating a larger community of people that you can tap into to come up with useful things for society. So from our perspective, yes, we are making biology easier and we're democratizing access to it, but we're also working to make that community of folks who are doing this work as constructive as possible and trying to create a culture essentially where people are trying to use these technologies for good rather than for harm.
I guess my concern is that if you look at the history of computers and software engineering, the easier it gets to design things, and especially when you look at things like computer viruses, it's gotten to the point now where essentially there are the equivalent of these, you know, send us a sequence and we'll give you a DNA. There's send us what you want your computer virus to do and we'll send you back a computer virus. I'm just a little concerned that the track record of humanity when given access, easy access to new technologies has not been great.
Well, I mean, what's the alternative to what you're suggesting? Should we all get rid of our computers so that we don't have the potential for computer viruses? I mean, you have to understand that, yes, you know, there were some costs that came about with the computer revolution, but there were also huge benefits. You're giving people access to information in a way that they never had before. So, I mean, in some ways, you can think about it that, you know, computers, save people's lives. You know, if I have a rare disease and my doctor doesn't happen to know how to diagnose it, I can go Google online and look for my symptoms and potentially find the right doctor to go to help cure myself, right? So, I mean, the problem with every technology is that you have to take the bad with the good. So, you know, what we can do basically is to try to bias the technology and the folks who are working around that technology towards good as much as possible. And you know, that's what I and others are actively working to do. You know, so I don't think it's your question is, you know, you're ignoring all of the good that has come out of things like making software programming easier and more open.
The point's well taken. One last question on the subject, and then we'll move on. I know that if my wife has told me she took a number of took organic chemistry in college and such, and was told that basically once you have a degree at that, you know, expect that the government's going to keep an eye on you. Later on in life, if you're ordering things, for example, has there been any thought or talk about, for example, Homeland Security keeping an eye on what's going on in this field?
Well, I would say that the relationships have been actually much more positive to that than that. I mean, I think the idea has been for researchers in the field and for folks from government and folks from industry to get together and figure out, you know, hey, there's a lot of good that can come out of this, but there is also some potential for accidents and harm. How do we work together to create an environment where the most constructive things happen? So I would say that there have certainly been discussions with folks from government, but it's not so much been how do we tamp down on this or how do we regulate this, but, you know, how do we work together to ensure that, you know, to minimize the risk of something bad happening?
So, changing topics, are kids who are entering secondary schools today prepared for a career in biotech? And what would you like to see change in the way biology is taught?
Well, you know, there's a lot that can be said about the U.S. education system, especially when it comes to science. But I would say that, you know, the coolest thing about synthetic biology is that it's a very creative process, right? People get to go in and think about, if I wanted to design a biological system, what could I go build? Maybe I want to build engineer E. coli that, you know, can take a bacterial photograph on a plate. Maybe I want to engineer E. coli to smell like wintergreen and bananas. You know, maybe I want to engineer a system that can detect arsenic contamination in well water so that folks in Bangladesh can test whether their wells are contaminated. you know, there's a huge potential for creativity. And so what I, one of the things that I love about synthetic biology and biological engineering is that there's a huge capacity to inspire young people to be creative and to get into science. And I think we're seeing a lot of that with young folks who are interested in synthetic biology, trying to figure out, you know, how do I get into this?
Do you think that the teachers at that level are up to the challenge of assisting with this kind of stuff, or are the kids going to have to kind of be Heinlein-esque and go off on their own to do it?
I mean, as with anything, I think there's going to be a spread. There are teachers who are actively looking to how to integrate these types of educational materials into their curriculums, and so, you know, they'd love to be able to integrate these types of ideas. And so, you know, the way the community is trying to foster that is basically by making a lot of the materials and the research and the work that goes on as open as possible. So, for example, I was a founder of openwetware.org. It's a wiki, basically, where biological engineers and scientists can post information about their work. And so folks in the synthetic biology community have really taken to that and basically posted their ideas and their work and their protocols. And by making this information available, you make it so that teachers and educators from all around the world can basically reuse that material in their own teaching. And so I think for enterprising teachers who want to make use of or who want to incorporate synthetic biology into the curriculums, you know, that there are avenues to that. We still need better materials, don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, we're trying to do all we can to make it easier for educators to teach about the field.
Your company, Ginkgo Bioworks, and I'm quoting from your website here, is focused on improving biology as a substrate for engineering. What does that, when you take the market speak away, what does that really mean in terms of products and services, and who do you see your major client base as?
So what Ginkgo is trying to do is make biology easier to engineer. And so all the founders of Ginkgo are all actually engineers from other fields. So I was a computer scientist. We have a chemical engineer, a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer, and another computer scientist is among our founders. So the way we think about biology and engineering biology is we think about it in terms of the design cycle. I want to be able to design a biological system, and then I want to be able to build it, and then I want to be able to test and see whether it worked, and I want to go around that loop as fast as possible. So what Ginkgo is trying to do is initially focus on the construction step. Say, if I want to build a biological system, I need a set of parts. Essentially, I need my Legos, which I can mix and match in order to build my engineered biological system. So I need my parts set, and I need a way to assemble those parts as quickly as possible into different biological systems so I can see which one works. So we think of it as, you know, essentially a platform for rapid prototyping of biological systems. And so that's what Ginkgo is doing right now, is developing the parts set and developing the technology for rapidly assembling parts into systems.
So if me or your typical Make magazine reader said, you know, gee, I'd like to go try this stuff out, you know, what kind of a setup do you need these days? Is it something that somebody with a few $100 and the inspiration and a basic background could go set up? Or are you still talking about a lab full of glassware to do this?
Well, it depends on exactly what the person wants to do. I think some basic experiments can be done really pretty cheaply with kind of, you know, with an enterprising person using eBay and whatnot. But the thing I should point out is that in terms of do-it-yourself biology or kind of the amateur biological engineering, there are regulations in certain places in this country where in terms of doing genetic engineering, so taking DNA from one organism and putting it to another. So you would need essentially a lab facility to do some of the work according to kind of federal regulations. The situation is not entirely clear, but I would say as a word of caution, there are some regulations in place that you should think about following if you're interested in this type of thing as an amateur.
So I guess what we need is the equivalent of the place where you can go and when you're repairing your car, if it has the lift and everything.
Exactly. Yeah, so there's lots of folks who are interested in kind of developing essentially the equivalent of, you know, hacker spaces or community labs where people can come together and think about how to have the right tools and equipment for engineering biological systems. So there's a group in Cambridge here that's we're already working on that problem.
So you can go and say, Charlie, could I borrow a cup of restriction enzyme?
Exactly, yeah.
So can you give us an idea what we can expect to hear at your eTech talk?
Well, at eTech, what we're really looking forward to doing is kind of chatting with folks with the about the technology and kind of the possibilities, as well as giving people an idea of what's possible. So we're going to do a little demo with some folks on where they get to probably engineer some bacteria to turn red is what we're going to try to do. So give people an idea of what's involved in biological engineering.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's going to be a very hands-on type of thing, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just listening to people talk can be a bit boring. So, you know, we want to give people a chance to play a little bit.
All right. Well, I've been talking to Reshma Shetty, who is one of the founders of Ginkgo Bioworks. She'll be speaking at O'Reilly's Emerging Technologies Conference in March, speaking on Real Hackers Program DNA. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.